Live from the podcast studio, this is From Long Distance to Marriage with Rich and Andrea. We're a once long distance couple who closed 5,000 miles of distance and are now happily married.
We talk long distance, marriage and relationships.
Hello all and welcome to episode 27 of From Long Distance to Marriage. This week we're going to talk about money in relationships, how to manage it responsibly and how to make sure that doesn't make you a weaker couple or cause you problems. And Rich is going to tell you a little bit about how we decided to do this episode because he's very, very proud of himself.
Well, so this is sort of another kind of request episode.
Ish.
Well, some people have said they wanted it, but basically this all stems from Twitter, where you can find us at Mr. Mrs. Distance, as always. So someone tweeted, this is like a three tweet thread, so bear with me. So someone tweeted, marry the man who remembers to air dry your Lululemon leggings, which is fair enough. Someone shared this and said, marry a woman who would rather spend $1,000 on a vacation than two pairs of leggings. So two things about this. One, I don't know what leggings cost $1,000.
You mean $500?
No, I mean he wrote $1,000.
On two pairs.
Oh, okay.
Lululemons don't cost $500.
So unless this is like Peruvian dollars or something, like
pesos.
But and then so they said, you know, basically marry a woman who would rather spend $1,000 on a vacation than two pairs of leggings. And this kind of struck me a little bit because it's very judgmental. Mm-hmm. And we've orchestrated our finances to not be that way. So I replied, marry the person of your choice and then arrange your finances in a way that covers joint savings and personal spending with no guilt. And I kind of thought nothing of this. And then over the next 3 days, this tweet got 16.6 thousand likes and nearly 1,000 retweets. I had to turn the notifications off for this. The same, even my battery was just...
I was getting updates at work and when he was out in the evenings, we're at this many likes.
Yeah.
We're at this
many likes. And I was showing on our Instagram stories, so, you know, any followers would have seen it. But because it was a big deal for us. Because yeah. One is like one, you know, it's fun. We've never had that much engagement before. But also, it was like... The statement didn't seem that profound to me. It was like this, it was a throwaway comment of, look, don't be a dick, like, let them spend their money. And then obviously it really struck a chord with people, so I started talking to a few people on there, like replying to people, and some of the shares, people saying that this is marriage goals, this is like, that sounds like a healthy marriage, all this kind of thing. And then, so I said, you know, do people want an episode of this? And they said they did. So it's a request that we sort of offered, but people said they wanted, if you know what I mean.
People also thought that we were cheating because you know that there's like a, not superstition, like a stereotype that if you have a joint social media account, someone's cheated and someone's being controlling. Obviously, if you follow us and you know us, we do share control and have one account for the podcast purposes, for, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Distance, from long distance to marriage in general. But we have our own social media accounts, just like our day-to-day life. Rich has
this is kind of like our business account.
Kind of, yeah. And because our business is something that we do together, it makes sense for us to be one. Anyways, there were some funny comments.
My favorite reply here was, I love it how we got from a joke to an actual marriage financial advice. but yeah, and there were a few people who replied again and said, you know, it doesn't matter. You don't need to spend that much money on this. And I think so the purpose of what my reply was that presumably, you know, in this situation where both couples are working and earning their own money, discretionary spending is entirely on them. So we wanted to do this episode really to have some transparency on how we do it, and we think it's not the only way to arrange finances, but
and it's not perfect, but it works for us.
And
yeah.
I can't think of a better way.
Not
you know,
really.
I know there are, though, if you're lucky enough to have an income where you can have all of your outgoings on one income and the other one can purely be saved, you know, that's great. And then, you know, that one income is, you have allowances from it. But for our one, so the way it works for us is just quite simple and it's all automated, which I think really helps. But we both have jobs, we both earn money and our salaries go into our own personal accounts. We've got a spreadsheet where we know the joint bill, so we split down the middle all the bills, so like the mortgage, the food, the utilities,
insurances,
all that kind of stuff, like the cable TV subscription, all that kind of stuff. We split down the middle, and then we have that money. We each have a automated direct debit that puts that into our joint account, and that account is just for bills. And then we have our own personal responsibilities like car payments.
Fuel. Yeah, so we this is where we might be a little bit different than some people. Our car payments, we pay ourselves and our own insurance. And
so
our
I know that some people put
gas, petrol,
everything into the joint account. And, you know, that's fine. We've discussed that, but we kind of thought we didn't really see the benefit of doing it. But it means that we've got our own hobbies and some of us drive more than the other one, whatever. Then,
yeah.
Then we cover that ourselves. And then basically what we say is we give ourselves, I'm going to call it a spending allowance. In the, for a long time we didn't, and we just sort of had one account each, excuse me, one account each, and then it would be bills and spending from it, and then every month we're spending too much, and it's, oh shit, we've got no money. And the way it works now is we say, right, we give ourselves X amount of money to spend
each yeah. month,
and that's completely judgment-free.
So that's, and we both have given ourselves about the same amount a month, roughly. So that's after our joint bills. So like you said, our mortgage, utilities.
I'd say it's after all financial
things. Yeah, and then our own independent hobbies, financial things.
So we allocate that from our own salaries, and then we say, right, we'll give each other, it give ourselves X amount, which is equal for the two of us, but it wouldn't have to be.
It's just kind of how it's worked out yeah. based on our own individual expenses.
But the way it works for us is, and we've worked out our spending allowance after agreeing how much we want to save every month. So yeah. we'll come into a little bit about shared goals and a vision, but we agreed we want to save money. We have reasons why. And it's more important that we save the money before we spend the money. So we said, right, well, we need to save this much and our bills are this much. And then we'll split the remainder 50-50 to be our personal spending money. And yeah. Because the goals are met, like the savings goals are met, because the bills are split and the money is automated, if one of us goes out and spends a lot of money or finances something, like, that's on us.
Sorry if you just heard that really bad motorcycle go past yeah. our house.
The new microphone, I'll pick it up. But yeah, so there's no judgment. And, you know, money has split up, like, good relationships. And
it's mainly, a source of stress.
It's a source of stress. And I think there's two ways that happens. One is sort of being opaque with your money. So there's sort of mistrust. Is it mistrust? Yeah, it's mistrust. And I think the other way is judgment. No one wants to, you don't want to work 5 days a week, feel good about yourself, you buy yourself something nice, and you come home and your life partner is, what do you buy that for?
Yeah.
So the issue I had with this tweet about the leggings is, there's that thing, like, some people know the cost of everything but the value of nothing, and that's kind of what it means to me. It's like, one, I think there's this idea that, well, you can buy a $10 legging, so there's no point buying a $100 legging. Like, they're not the same thing. Like, sure, markup exists, but a lot of times you're paying extra for good reason.
Yeah, and I think we should also, you know, disclaimer, make a disclaimer.
Neither of us own any Lululemon.
No, but that's not what I was going to say. But we are, I think, overall kind of thrifty people. We look for bargains where we can. You know, we shop at Costco bulk, and then we shop at, like, Aldi, you know, to get the other stuff. You know, we look for bargains, and we use VoucherCloud, you know. But we also both have luxurious tastes in other departments. Rich is a guitarist. And he has some very, very expensive guitars, like, expensive enough that they have to be listed separately on our insurance. But it's worth it. Like, I don't judge that purchase because he makes good use of them. He takes good care of them. And it's a hobby that he takes seriously. It's not like he just decided, I think I'm going to take some guitar lessons. And then 2 weeks later goes out and buys a really expensive guitar. I would have, you know, there's a time when you should have an opinion about spending habits like that. Like, oh, maybe make sure you like it a little bit longer before you right. buy a really expensive guitar, you know, get maybe a bit nice, whatever. And there's times when you think you should respect, you know what, this is a big deal to my partner. For me, I like a few luxury brands. Like, I'll shop at, like, Primark. But
if anyone abroad, because I don't think you have Primark
anymore. Primark's, like, cheaper than Target. Like, it's like way a real
budget clothing store.
But they have some really cute stuff, and some of it lasts yeah. actually pretty long. So I'm kind of, we're both like that. We both like really cheap stuff. We like a bargain, but we also
and have we're taste. Also not opposed to going secondhand.
No, for like, certain stuff. not really close. So just because you have patience
see,
for it,
just because you see a brand doesn't mean it has to be brand new. But also, and but let's talk about value a little bit here.
Because
you can shop at Primark and you can buy probably fucking 50 pairs of leggings for £100.
Yeah, probably. Pounds, you know. Yeah.
But okay, and what you're getting for that is material. You know, I've bought not from there, but I've bought cheap clothes before, cheap jeans and t-shirts, and they fade, they lose their shape, t-shirts, the print will come off, you know, so
stitching comes on around, off around the bottom.
And don't get me wrong, I've seen t-shirts priced at just ludicrous money, and there is a balance, but you've got things like resale value. So if you decide, you know, you've got a Louis Vuitton bag, if you decide to sell that, it's going to maintain quite a lot of its price. You've got, for some of these items, durability, like in the case of Lululemon, because this set me off on a little research tangent, this whole tweet thing. I was looking for reviews from people who use it, and they seem to be one of those brands where when people use them, they stay loyal to them.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, one review is this guy who, like, goes outdoors, and he says, okay, it's an expensive piece of clothing, but it's saving me buying all these other clothes.
Yeah, it's a performance brand.
But it's performance, but they're also designed in a way that they've got, I don't know what the model is, but they're like, they look like office pants, trousers. Okay. But when you touch them, they're like
exercise.
They're like comfies.
Yeah.
So this guy was saying, like, he wears them on the plane. He can wear them when he's outdoors doing his activities and sports. So they've also got, I can't remember what the thing is, but like this odor absorbing material in there.
It makes underwear like that.
Yeah, sure. There's a markup on it. But the ones you're buying in Primark don't have any of that. They're going to probably... You buy cheap and then you think, I don't mind replacing these.
Yeah,
where you buy expensive and you think, I expect these to last me.
You could also buy Nike ones, though, that are performance and aren't as expensive as Lululemon. Are they as good? I don't know. But I think that's kind of beside the point.
Yeah, really. The point I'm getting at is that don't just look at the price tag. Look at, okay, what's this brand doing that can charge more? So, okay, Nike's a good idea. I use Nike for running tops. And I like that dry fit material. Yeah, fine, it's a bit more money, but it's more comfortable.
Mm.
Like, you know, and that's also not ludicrous money.
Yeah.
You know, and I think we're not talking, if you're looking to buy a handbag, purse, whatever, like 30,000.
Yeah.
That's a different
Well, business. If you've got the money, then more power to you. Sure. But that being said,
but so what I mean is the value's probably not there as much.
And the value isn't always necessarily just a monetary thing. So you mentioned I have a Louis Vuitton handbag. I love the brand Louis Vuitton, not because I'm necessarily particularly trendy or a fashionista, but my grandmother carried a Louis Vuitton for years. My mom has always carried Louis Vuitton. My sister carries Louis Vuitton. It's kind of like...
It's like a sisterhood for you.
It's like a family tradition, yeah. It's what the women in my family have always carried. And, you know, we went out together. You bought me a few years back... a secondhand one off of like a luxury good website. It was hardly used at all. And I loved it. It was a little bit small for, you know, kind of day-to-day carrying stuff. And then we went together, like my normal day-to-day handbags, which were good quality handbags, probably like $100 or less handbags. They were all, I kind of got a bunch around the same time because I fell in love with this brand who is now no longer in existence. Anyways, they were all really wearing out. And I think I just need a good handbag. So we were looking at like Fossil and stuff. And Risha said, look, if you're going to spend like $200 on a nice leather handbag, why don't you just go and get a Louis Vuitton? Like, we're in a position...
It's going to last you forever.
Yeah, it's going to last you forever. You've always wanted it. It's going to be an experience. And we're in a position where we can afford it now. And I can be a little bit guilty when it comes to spending stuff like that. And I overthink it. And I feel really bad. Like, oh, that's, you know, God, I mean... Many, many, many date nights. That's, you know, a couple months worth of savings that we could put.
Yeah, but we were also smart, so we weren't. So, yeah, we went, and I wanted it to be an experience. Because going back to value, it's not just monetary. So, for you, the value was, this is like a family tradition. And for me, the value is seeing the joy it brings you. So, I didn't want it to be, oh, let's order it online and it'll be here. I said, let's go to Bond Street in London, like where they've got like their flagship store, and lovely, pick it out. And then the one you'd planned on buying in person wasn't as good, and we're like, do you know what?
Were
like
two that...
this one's nicer. It was a little bit more. It's hardly it was less than £100, I think. Well, if you're spending it and you're gonna have it forever, then get the one you want. And
it was a lovely day,
but we decided not to buy it outright. We decided we had a 0% credit card, and we said it makes more financial because you don't pay any more money for it. We didn't see it as debt because we could have paid it if you wanted to, but it's like we'd rather have the money in
and
the
before
account.
We went in the store, we had this conversation.
Yeah,
and I think this is another really important thing to mention that if you are going to make... So yeah, we're saying you should be able to spend your money guilt-free, but that doesn't mean there shouldn't be conversations around it. You should... If you're planning on spending more than, like, £100, I do think, or, you know, $100-ish dollars...
I think each couple decides that figure.
Yeah, but I... Yeah, so if there's a certain figure that you guys think, anything more than that, I'm just going to mention it to you. If it's a couple hundred, yeah, say, just let you know I'm doing this. Yeah, because
it may be that actually I was kind of thinking that there's this big thing, maybe we want to go on a trip, or one of you sort of, so actually, if you save the money, we could do this. Okay, yeah, we'll do that.
Yeah, or, so you might forget, oh, we have to renew our insurance this month. You know, there might be something coming up, say, hey, maybe wait till next month to do this, you know, after payday. So we're not saying just go out and do whatever you want with your money without any consideration for your partner. We have...
But the conversation isn't permission.
Yeah, or can judgment. I do this? We ask each other a lot, like... But it's more, I want your opinion. Do you think this is a good idea? Is there anything I'm forgetting that's coming up that we're going to need to spend?
In this instance, we thought we don't want to go and spend all the money in one go. We want to keep the money in our account. We had 0% credit cards. We weren't going to pay any interest on it.
Yeah.
And they said, we're going to pay this off. And we decided, like, the credit card's got, like, 3-year interest-free term. We said, we want to clear this in 12 months. This is how much we need to pay.
Yeah, and so we, before like you said, we went to store, we knew.
We worked this out in bed, like, because we discussed
that night, and I didn't sleep because I was so excited.
Then the next morning we woke up and like, okay, so let's just run the numbers again, and if we want to pay off quicker, like, and if you miss a payment, it's going to be this many months. That's, and we worked it all out.
Yeah, so the handbag I was looking at, we realized, okay, it'll take that many, I think it was going to take like 10 months or 11 months. Then I decided to get a slightly more expensive handbag, and it was going to be
one more month.
A year. It was like a month or two more. So we're like, that's cool, we're perfect with that. That's great, and it wasn't a huge amount, and I think I'm done.
So basically the value of this was different for each of us. For me, the value was the experience that us were able to give you and to see the look on your face. We had fun in there, like, and that's the thing people don't mention with luxury brands. I was going to say they forget it, but they don't, because I think if you've never been with one, you don't know.
Yeah.
Like, you get a very different treatment.
Oh, that's fantastic. Like,
not enough to completely but... this touched another point I was going to come to, which is there's a lot of things that go into that price. And I think a lot of people see money, like the case of these leggings, they go, why pay apparently $500 for a pair of leggings?
I don't think they're that much, no. But okay.
They're about 100, I guess. And I've seen them cheaper, but let's say it's $100. Someone's looking at that and going, oh, you buy a $100 leggings, you can get 10 pairs for that. Well, you can't. You can buy 10 pairs of leggings, but as you've already discussed, quality's obviously. But there's also, behind the scenes there, so you mentioned the guitar brands. Like, the guitar brands I buy are American, whereas a lot of the cheaper ones are Asian. So part of that cost is wages.
The craftsmanship.
But we'll get to that. But like, you're paying, in that price that you're of the item you're buying, is the wages for the people who make it. So I'm paying mainland US wages to people, and I'm quite happy
not
to do that.
Not sweatshop prices.
Not sweatshop prices, exactly. So you go to Primark and you're paying like £2-3 for a pair of trousers, or jeans, leggings, whatever, you know that they're, you know, they're probably being made, not necessarily sweatshop, but they're being made cheap. So I'm paying someone's wages, I'm paying for import costs to a degree. And then, like you said, there's craftsmanship. There's the, in the case of the guitars, like higher quality materials. The case of those particular guitars, they take longer to make because of the finishing process. So you have cheaper guitars or different model guitars where they can really churn them out really quick. And this guitar is like, okay, it's got to hang there for a few days, drying. Well, that time where it's still in the factory is costing that company money, and that has to come down to me to pay. And it's just, so, you know, there's all these hidden things in price that people don't factor in when they just say, oh, they're just ripping you off. And in the case of the luxury service, so when we go into the Louis Vuitton store, and it's silly things like someone opens the door as you walk in, you get fawned over, like, they offer you drinks. They're like, it's a very different experience. Well, that means the company's got to pay those people pretty good wages to offer that service. They've got to have the fit. And okay, this isn't huge money, but it's all in conjunction. And then on top of that, they put their sort of luxury item price tag because they don't want it to be flooding the market.
And for luxury brands, those luxury stores are in
high-end places.
High-end parts of big cities, Beverly Hills, you know, you think about Rodeo Drive, you think about Bond Street and Regent Street in London. Yeah, the rent
is not cheap.
Yeah, so, and then they have really big stores, these flagship stores, so they've got that to pay. They have to pay for, yeah, high-class, well-educated, well-spoken clientele, because that's the image they want to present. And then, yeah, we went in there, and it was the best day. We took the train up to London. It was really cold. It was, like, January, so it was all, like, scarf yeah. and coat weather.
And then you get after service.
And they call you by your name in there. Like, I think they, especially when you pay, they see your credit card or whatever, yeah. and they acknowledge you by name, and, you know, they, it's just, it's brilliant, and it was lovely, and it was an experience that I'm not going to forget. And, yeah, that yeah. handbag is going to last me many years, but every time I pick it up, and I,
yeah,
apart from special occasions, I have been using that handbag for more than a year.
Every day.
Every single day. Yes. Unless it's like an evening where we take a clutch, or if it's like a day out in London and I don't want to take, you know, my expensive handbag. But for the most part, probably 350 days I've used that handbag.
Yeah.
And every time I look at it, I just think of the quality, what it means to me, and the day we got it. And I love it just as much now as I did a year ago, and I will for years to come. But something I wanted to say about the clothing aspect is, if you buy cheap, which I do often, you're going to spend as much eventually as you do if you buy expensive. So let's say jeans, for an example. I was wearing Primark jeans, and because I'm a curvy girl, my thighs rub together, and I would be able to wear a pair of those jeans for a few months before you start getting, like, little holes, like where your legs rub together, or, you know, like they just would wear. So you think about in a year, I'm buying, not that I only have one pair of jeans, but for that specific pair, I'm replacing them probably 3 or 4 times.
Mm-hmm.
If you buy a pair of Levi's, which are quite expensive, or a different name brand, you're probably going to buy one pair a year. So maybe they'll cost you $80 or whatever, or $60 or £80, depending where you live. Like, they're extortionately expensive here, not going to lie. We always buy them in America. But
yeah, but that, I think a lot of that's import.
Yeah, a lot of that is import. But if you buy a $20, £20 pair of jeans 4 times, you spent that £80, and you could have bought that one more quality pair.
Yeah, I think there's a thing, you know, you can buy once and you buy to last, and also, but like I was gonna say before, like there's aftercare. So, you know, I had an issue with the first expensive guitar I bought, and the customer care was fantastic. And you know, if you had a problem with your bag, like Louis Vuitton would be available. You know, so there's that. And then in the case of jeans, if you buy a pair of Levi's, they alter them for free. Okay, yeah. I paid a little bit because I had them tapered for my boots, but you can buy a pair of Levi's and you can go to any Levi's store and say, can you tailor these? And they do it for free. If you go and buy that cheap pair of jeans, you can pay the same amount of money just getting them to fit you nice.
Yeah.
So there's these little things in the cost, and I know there's going to be people listening to this going, yeah, but like, oh, yeah. That the people calling you by your name at the door for you in the store, that's not costing you the 50% increase. And no, it's not. And that's comes down to like the value. So the value's either there or it's not. There's a lot of things where for us, the value's not there.
Exactly. So leggings.
We don't have expensive cars.
No.
You know, like we kind of think, when you're in that car, like it's pretty much the same.
We have nice cars. We have Japanese cars. We don't have German. We don't have, you know, like, you know, they're nice cars.
I mean, if the money fell in my lap, yeah, I'd go and buy a Tesla or a Jag. Yeah. But we're not, there are people who overextend themselves to get the fancy car because the badge means a lot to them. Like the brands we buy, there's two reasons we buy the brands we buy. One is purpose. So that my guitars, I feel like the value is there for a number of reasons. Or there's the value that you get, the emotional value, the connection you get. And then there's things like
trustworthiness, like
of the brand. Like the brand reputation. You think if I buy that item, it's going to last me. It's like I do wear Levi's.
Mm-hmm.
But what I don't do is buy Levi's at full price. Like you said, I'm not paying £100 for a pair of jeans. But when we go to America, I've ordered them on eBay before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you can buy these things cheaper.
Or my mom will say, what is Rich want for his birthday this year? And I'll say, hey, he'd be happy if you just bought him a pair of jeans. And,
right, yeah, so you know, we will look for ways to
make savings on that. And
but,
there are ways.
But there are, you know, so we're not going to go, oh, let's overextend on the car. Like, the way I see it is, when you're in the car, like, as long as it handles nice and it's comfortable and it, you know, it's good, you don't need it. And if someone crashes into it, it's not as big a deal and it's not a 50 grand car. So decide where the value is for you. But the real thing is you should have autonomy over your own spending. And if you're earning the money, And like Andrea said, you know, just check in and say, is there any reason why I shouldn't do this? Is there anything coming up? But beyond that, it's we've arranged our finances in a way that the bills are sorted, our savings or debt repayment is sorted, and we've agreed an allowance for ourselves. And then what we do with that money, so we may not like what we buy with it. You might say, oh, I bought this book, and I think, well, that book looks shit. But, you know, it's your money, and you get your enjoyment.
It's not for me to enjoy. But I would say, for the record...
Unless it's things like you go and buy a dog, and then you think, well, this is...
Those things affects both of you. You need to think about it. But I will say that I would rather go on a vacation than have two pairs of leggings, personally.
Right.
But that's not where the value is to me. If you said, do you want another Louis Vuitton or do you want to go on this vacation? I'd have to think about it. So that's...
Yeah, okay. So, but that's an interesting point because there was a spin-off conversation on Twitter where this guy said, look, the issue for him was he wants to marry someone with shared goals. And in his case, it was travel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I think that's fair enough.
Yeah.
So, but even within that, I think... probably unlikely that all your money is going to go towards that. And you run the risk in that situation of becoming quite tyrannical and saying, so if his partner has spent any money, he'd be like, well, hang on, we wanted to go to, like, Italy, right? Why are you spending that? You still have to have a degree of autonomy and control over your own money. There still has to be the initial conversation of, okay, one, where, like, what is this money for? Where are we going? Two, how much or what percentage do we need to put in here? And what are we left with to spend? Because if realistically, you can't say, right, all of our remaining money after bills is going to go into the savings funds. Like, for the vast majority of people, that's not realistic.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, you know, obviously, you're going to want a partner who you're aligned with. But I think you also have to accept the fact that there are going to be differences. Like, we're aligned in a lot of ways, but the things we like to spend our money on do differ.
Luckily, yes, they do, but that's because we have different hobbies. I don't play guitar. You don't carry a handbag, for instance.
Right.
But we both appreciate luxury things. There's things that we both wanted to attain at some point. You know, for instance, Rich always wanted a Gibson guitar, and he'd waited for years. And maybe that's
another point, is that what these luxury brands can do is they can be like milestones in your life.
Yeah.
Unless you're very bad with money, you've got no problem just... going into debt, or you have significant earnings, a lot of the time you want that thing for a long time. You wanted a Louis Vuitton for years, like the whole time I knew you. I wanted, a Gibson guitar for a long time. So when you finally get it, like you said, every time you look at that, every time you pick it up, every time I open the case, like that kind of thing, you feel good.
Mm.
Yeah, you don't feel good putting on Primark jeans, I imagine. Like,
but they're fine.
They're fine, yeah. But you don't get happiness from them.
Yeah.
And I think that's another thing to consider is, you're paying for this, but that means you didn't have it for a long time. And when you finally get to the point in life, you think, I can get that. It's then significant.
It's an achievement, yeah, and it's exciting. And again, going, and I told my sister, because, you know, my sister loves to shop, and she loves Louis Vuitton just as much, you know. And so I messaged her and said, I did something today, and I sent her a picture of the bag, and she's like, oh my God, isn't it just the best feeling going in there and saying, I want this one, and like paying for it. And
then it's like a family bonding exercise.
It is. And like, oh my God, like I like Louis Vuitton, not just handbags, but I like other stuff too. And for Christmas this year, this past Christmas, Rich got me a beautiful shawl scarf thing, like a really pale pink, beautiful one. And I didn't know at all what he had got me for Christmas. And
I had to transport this fucking thing in the big box.
The big yellow Louis Vuitton box in my
suitcase, hoping like to wrap the box in a shirt so that if I open my suitcase, you didn't see. Because they're big, bright orange, like
big flat,
orange boxes. Box. People can, you immediately, oh, that's a Louis Vuitton box.
Yeah, you know. And so, but we got it there. He wrapped it, you know, away from me, put it under the tree. And then Christmas came around, and, you know, my whole family sitting around the tree at my sister's house opening presents. And it was in like a, I think it was in a, no, you just wrapped it. But it was wrapped.
It was in an envelope.
It was wrapped in an envelope and tissue.
Like a padded envelope.
Yeah. So I was opening it, and my sister was sitting like kind of catty-cornered to me. And her eyes got really big, and I was like, oh, what is this going to be?
She saw the orange.
She saw the color of the box. I couldn't see it from the angle because it was like the side where it was slit open a bit, the paper. And I was like, oh, what could this be? I have no idea. She said, this is going to be good. I can see the box. And then I got the tissue off of it, saw the box and I was like, what have you done? And then I opened the lid and she could see it. And we literally, there was just this moment. We looked at each other and we both, in the same exact tone, ooh.
Oh, like, your mom joined in, I think.
She, like, oh, my God. Yeah, but my sister and I literally the same exact sound, the same pitch. And it was, and we just started cracking up. And yeah, it was great. It was lovely.
So I think in the case of the shawls, like, the financial value probably isn't there as much. Like,
yeah,
you know, they're, because they're made of, like, silk and stuff, like, that's quite a delicate...
Yeah, item. I've already got a snag on it, so which I'm devastated about. And I said to you at
the beginning, like, it's going to happen, just go with
it. I'm scared to wear it, yeah.
And you're scared to wear it, so...
Can I admit something to you?
What?
I wore it, like, a few weeks back when we went to the cinema, because it was quite chilly. And the next time I put it on, I pulled it off the coat rack, and there was, like, two little pieces of popcorn in the folds. It wasn't greasy, though, so but there's no marks. But yeah, I was like, oh, no.
You know, so there is a bigger argument there. If someone to say that scarf's not worth it or that shawl's not worth it, like, they're probably right.
But it was a gift.
But the value for me was the happiness it brought you.
Yeah, and the ooh.
And it also needs to be said, like, they're not nearly as expensive as the bags. Yeah. So the value's probably not there as much, but they are significantly cheaper to begin with. And I think
there's also a value for you that you giving me... It's not like a status thing, but...
I like you to look nice.
Well, not just that, but I think that, you know, I left my family to come and be here, and I know that you get... It makes you feel good to show that you can provide for me and you can give me nice things yeah. in front of my family. Not like in your face, but just, I'm taking care of her. She's getting nice things. She's mm-hmm. not that that's what it is to be happy, but it does attribute. It is
to your mum.
Well, don't be mean.
But I think that, so far, like this episode, we've essentially what we're saying is there are any number of reasons people buy these quote unquote luxury brands. Mm-hmm. There are multiple reasons. They're all valid. If you can afford it and it's within your sort of financial remit to do it, then there should be no judgment from your partner.
Even if you can't afford it that day. Like Rich said, we could afford to buy that handbag, but we like to have money tucked away just in case. Luck would have it, a few months later, our garage roof sprung a leak.
Yeah.
And we were glad that we had that chunk of money.
So I think, yeah, and I think basically what this is leading into is our next point about sort of discussions. So yeah. I said before that money has broken down very good couples. Before.
And it was a very big source of stress early on for us.
Yeah, especially when we didn't really have much money and we didn't... This is one of the unspoken... things. Everyone knows at the beginning of a relationship, like, it's kind of hard. Like, we've spoken before about you trying to make a home together, and in the case of long distance couples, like, someone's moved. It's just what people often don't talk about is money. It's like, we didn't really have much money, it was hard going, and then it almost, like, almost not having any kind of makes it easier in the sense of yeah. you know there's nothing left to spend, but it's still hard. In a lot of cases with money, you've still got the two different backgrounds. So I was listening to a podcast recently about this, and the guy was saying that the psychology of money was saying, like, people who've grown up poor, like, maybe not in complete poverty, but, like, poor, you know, their attitude to money is often more like, well, it's never around, so when I get it, I spend it. So they never really escape that
mm-hmm.
problem, because even if they earn money, they then spend it. Then you've got the people who, like, hoard money, or they've always had money. It's like, yeah, I'll spend it, I'll save it, like... Well, then these two people can collide in a relationship, and you've got one person going, okay, I think we need to save.
So, like, it's like if a chimp and a squirrel fell in love, because right. chimps eat whatever they can when they can, and squirrels are hoarding things away for a rainy day.
Yeah, so you just think you've got one person who's like, doesn't really matter what they're earning, they're like, right, I don't want to spend, you know, there's a lot of, like, probably ambitious financial advice, which is like, rent shouldn't exceed 30% of your income, okay, fine, try that in London, but, you know, you've probably got the person who's like, okay, I'm going to have X percent of my money, it goes on bills, X percent on this, and I'm going to have X amount to spend. Well, they might fall in love with someone who says, I've never had any money, and I'm going to enjoy it because I could be dead tomorrow. That's polar opposites to then come together and figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, that's hard work, yeah. I think, a lot of times, because you're not only agreeing on... everything else, like, what division should we have for the bills, how much money do we need to earn, all this and that, you're then saying, what's your actual attitude to money?
Mm-hmm.
Which is like a psychological shift, which is, that's a huge ask for anyone. Like, if I say to you, right, I don't think you look at money properly, that's a very different conversation to, okay, we're running this, running that, how should we do this?
Yeah.
And then you've got the people who, and I imagine if, I don't think it's exclusively this, but I think it probably happens most when someone's earning significant amounts of money, where they say, I don't want my partner knowing. And I think the flip side of that is you've got the people who hide their debt. She's saying, all right, actually, I'm in 50 grand worth of debt. I'm not going to tell my partner that. That's huge. Or I'm earning $150,000 a year. I don't want to tell them that because they might want me to start spending everything. Or they might want me to pay 100% of all the bills. You know what I mean? Like, they may feel this pressure.
Yeah.
So
I think we had the benefit of starting out with nothing. You know, I had a good job. I was a teacher before I moved here. But then, you know, I had to pay for visas and I didn't work for a few months. I essentially started over financially completely when I moved here. And Rich was working freelance, starting a small one-man business. So we genuinely had nothing. So we didn't really have much to figure out. So we were
like,
able...
We had months where we were like, rent's tomorrow and I've not been paid by my clients yet.
Yeah.
Like, we had to negotiate with the landlords like, look, can we pay you in a few days? I'll have to chase my clients. Say, I need that money.
Yeah, and it was really stressful. I mean, I was working at a pub at that time, like in our first apartment. And I remember bursting into tears in front of my boss because I didn't know how... We were good for it. The money was coming. You were earning it. But when you're freelance, you don't get a paycheck on the same day every month or every 2 weeks.
So when we say like, oh yeah, we went to the Louis Vuitton store, like, I don't want people listening to this thinking like, well, it's easy for you. You've got the money. It's like, we kind of have the money now.
Ish.
But the reason we're able to do it now is because, yes, our situation's improved and we earn more money than we did when we were starting out. But, you know, it's been nearly 10 years. Like, we should be earning more than we
God,
did.
That makes me feel old.
But the bigger thing is that we've been very open.
Yes.
So we know what each other's earning. We know when we've had debts and say, hey, my credit card is this much money and I've got these others. And we've had, like, genuine sit-down money meetings.
I do want to make a note, though, that the reason we're very transparent is because we had no choice but to be. Because when Rich was earning freelance amounts, it was some months were feasts and some months were famine.
Yeah, but...
So we had to really know...
I think the choice is always there, and I'm going to say that because there are people who, in my situation or your situation, where they would lie about what they earn.
Yeah,
you know, so it's in my situation where it's feast or famine, so in the period where it's feast and someone sent me a nice size check, someone would have said they got half that.
Yeah, that'd be horrible.
Yeah, but so we view it as we had no choice but to be, but we've only viewed that way because we've always been very honest with each other. But the other, so yeah, we have these money meetings where we sit down with a spreadsheet and we say, right, what are our goals? What do we want to do? Like, we want to clear the mortgage early, we want to travel to America because we want to see your family. Like,
yeah.
Okay, and we sit down and say, right, this is all the money that we earn. These are our outgoings. Do you know what? Like, this is like a big percentage of our earnings is going out. What can we cut down? And we have cut down. We said, okay, we can reduce our phone bills. Do you know what? We don't need to pay that much money for cable. Like, we look to cut back in places.
We do. And you're really in charge of, not in charge, but you're the one that leads that and you're very good at it.
But a lot of couples, and I know you weren't thrilled when I suggested like a money meeting because it feels very like, I have meetings at work.
Yeah, I didn't like it.
I think it's really important and we're able to say, okay, well, we're able to sort of reverse engineer things. We'll say, okay, if we wanted to go on holiday in 2 years here, it's going to cost roughly this much money. We need to save this much a month to sort of be on track for it. Whereas the alternative to that, unless you're blessed to have an abundance of money where you can just afford it, the alternative is just sort of hope it will happen. Or you put on a credit card and then you've got to worry about the debt. And I think a lot of couples do both of those things. We've always been very open and we've mentioned before, like, almost sort of treating your relationship like a business.
I hate...
It doesn't sound romantic.
Yeah, I hate the way it sounds and I hate when he says it. But
at the
same time...
it is still romantic.
Huh?
It is still romantic.
I don't think it's romantic at all, but it is necessary and has proved to be really helpful to us.
And this isn't like... We rarely do it anymore anyway. Like
it was when we were trying to get ourselves going in a certain direction and we needed a lot of... It took a lot of work.
It did. But what really helped was automating stuff. So, okay, the allowance we give ourselves, we do manually. Only because there might be one that says, you know what, I'll give myself a little bit less to spend and I can put that much money like towards that on that credit card.
Like,
that
for
bill.
Instance, this handbag, I have a payment and a half, which means there's a month of a full payment that we've been making towards it, and then there's just going to be a bit of change left over. Like half of the normal payment, or not even that much. I realized that I've got a little bit of wiggle room this month with some other expenses, and I can actually make a slightly extra payment and pay it off this month.
Yeah. So the money meetings, like, the automation really helped, but before that, we decided we'd do this monthly to begin with. So we could see what was what each month. We could, I think since the first time we were doing it, we kind of roughly knew what was going on, but it wasn't completely transparent. So you didn't necessarily know the exact numbers for some things, and I didn't for other things. So we were able to say, look, this is what all the insurances cost. Like, you spend this money on cat food and dog food, and I'm spending this much on insuring the animals, and the utilities are costing this, and the TV's costing, the cable TV. It's cost this, and we're able to just see all the numbers in one place, and we're also able to just be upfront and say, okay, my credit card looks like this, and I need to pay this much money towards it to clear it by then. And what are our goals? Like, okay, like I said before, yeah, we said we do want to clear the mortgage earlier than like the bank's term, but that won't happen by accident. That needs us to say, okay, we both agree with that, and we. Okay, we can agree to pay this much money a month extra on the mortgage. Like, none of that stuff just happens on its own or by chance. Like, it has to be very deliberate. And these meetings just, they're short, like half an hour. But what it does is it means we're both on the same page, and it removes so much stress because no one's there thinking, like, what's happening with this? Oh, what if she doesn't want to clear the mortgage? Really, she wants to spend that money.
It also means that we know exactly where is what, because what's where, rather, because, you know, Rich happens to work in the finance industry, and so he knows a lot more than I do about this stuff, and he knows a bit more about investments, and he's also naturally more curious and keen to do it. So in this area, he does kind of lead and I follow. That's not to say that he makes any decisions without me. Even though I'm not interested in it, I usually have a pretty good head for these kind of decisions. And there's been times when you've said, I want to do this. And I think, ooh, maybe that's not a good idea because of this. Or maybe we should do that instead. And we have good conversations. And sometimes you agree. And sometimes I'm wrong. So that might be a case in your marriage that someone kind of leads this more. But you need to be willing to follow and get on board with it.
I also have the opinion, if you're in a relationship where, like, it's all with one person, like, what if something happens
to you? Yeah, so that's kind of my point. So when we have these money meetings, he says, we've got this much in investments. Okay, so now I have a good idea. If something, heaven forbid, were to happen to him, well, I know that this much is invested and that it's worth this much right now, so we've got that.
You
don't know
the password, though, so you can't
get well, you can have to give me that. Or this savings account has this much in it, or, you know, we're going to have this big expense. Well, I might know that there's a big expense coming up that you may have forgotten about. And
on
that point,
we have an agreement on how much money we want in cash available. Yeah. So, like I said, when the garage roof starts leaking, we go, okay, now we have options. Do we take it out of that emergency fund, or do we put it on another 0% credit card and have it? You know, but there's no surprise. There's no, like, you're going to have that couple where, oh, you didn't tell me you got £1,000 in cash. Like, let's go and spend it. And well, no, that's there for when the roof falls in. Like, that's there for a reason. That's not, like, accessible money. We know exactly how much money we have between us in the bottle closer. We know if we're ever paying the mortgage. We know if we're taking a break from doing that because we've got other expenses or commitments. It's all very open.
We are also very big on budgeting. And again, that was originally because we had to.
But I want to just, I know you're sick of me saying it, caveat this by saying that we're not, because, like, a lot of people don't like budgets, and I don't like budgets, like, in the sort of daily strict sense, like, oh, if I spend anything, I've got to go through my receipts and write down. Like, I'm not going to do that.
No, we don't do that.
Our budget is, we have a spreadsheet with our joint and individual
equipment. Yeah, what I'm saying, like, we don't budget our spending money. If you want to spend half of your spending money for the month in one go on some purchase, then that's, you've got fine. A lean
3 weeks.
Yeah, and then you've got a lean few weeks, which often happens to us, because, like, the first week we get paid, it's like, let's go on a nice date. Let's go to the fancy movie theater. I want to buy this. And then the rest of the month, you're like, oh shit, I need to be careful now. I've got
£2.
No, it's not like that, but it's like, I've got to stretch this amount for a good few weeks, because in the UK, many jobs like ours are paid monthly. So you get a nice big chunk, but you got to make it last.
So budgeting.
Yeah, we had to do it. This was in the days when, okay, our bills cost this much. We have a little bit of money for fun, which means we can spend this amount on food and no more, like food shopping, grocery shopping. We still do that because we like to know what's what. I genuinely can tell you roughly within £2 how much I spend at the grocery store every week. That's how right. much we spend at Costco. Once a month we go to Costco, we buy a bunch of meat, and then a few things to last us a month. We go home, we freeze all the meat. And
Let's be transparent about it, because I know people who are like, they're a two-person family and they're spending like ridiculous money on food.
Yeah.
We spend £200 a month on feeding ourselves.
Well, that's our budget.
Okay, we might spend £210. But our budget is £200, and the way we split that is we have £100 a month. We go to Costco and we buy things like meat and paper goods and stuff. And we don't buy fruit and veg there because we go once a month. Yeah. We're not going to last. So then we have £100 a month. We spend roughly £25 a week.
Between £25 and
£30. On fresh food, or buy like a Friday pizza or whatever. But bread, broadly speaking,
things like that, butter, milk, eggs.
And the way we manage that, again, so the lesson we've learned is we used to have like a bank account each, and we'd spend from it, and then we'd get into all sorts of trouble. And now we have different accounts for different things. So we've got a credit card just for food. Mm-hmm. So you can look at that and say, right, every month this gets cleared. So if the balance on that is £250, we're £50 over budget.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's £190 at the end of the month, oh, that's cool, we're £10 under budget. But that's all that card is for.
Yeah.
And then I've got like, so the bank account, we've got multiple accounts, but so the bank accounts that we get paid into, we don't really spend from that because the money automatically goes to the joint account for bills, and then it goes into a separate account that we've each got for spending. So I've got one card, and any money, if there's any money in that account, that's for me to spend guilt-free without worrying, is a bill going to get paid?
And it doesn't mean that we only spend it on ourselves. I might say, hey, I want to take us out to dinner.
Yeah,
the next week, that Rich will say, I want to buy us a takeaway, or I want to take us to a movie, or I want to go see a concert.
But I'm only saying this for people who are kind of thinking, okay, how do I make this work? Because it's getting better with like banking technology, but like, I used to run into this problem a lot where we'd be out on a Saturday and I'd open my bank and I'd see how much money I've got, and it'd say, oh, I've got more than I thought. Because it didn't fucking update on a weekend. So yeah, I think I've got £100. Well, what it wasn't telling me was there's a £50 bill coming out, mm-hmm. or two £20, £30 bills. Then on Monday, Tuesday, I'd get a text saying, you're overdrawn. So now the way it works is we've got...
I think we should plug Monzo.
Yeah, we use Monzo, which is great.
I don't know if they have it in America. I'm not sure.
But they'll be equivalent. But what's great about Monzo is... my phone and my Apple Watch tell me a transaction's gone through before the receipt has printed.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what day it is. It could be Sunday at 1 o'clock in the morning. If I buy something, you immediately know what it is. You categorize it so you can say, oh, I spent a lot on eating out this month.
Because I remember like in our early days when I had... Well, we weren't saving really anything. So I had more spending money. But, you know, that part of that went towards the grocery. We weren't really budgeting as well at that stage. We were, but we weren't being as smart about it. You'd say, you have X amount of money left over. Where is it gone? And I genuinely didn't know.
Yeah.
It was bits and bobs. Now, with Monzo, I can go through. I sound like actually I'm reading an ad. Now, with Monzo, I can go through and see exactly. No. But it categorizes it. You can see, like, you can see what shop you spent at, but you can break it down and entertainment, which includes movies and days out, and then
but you know, it does beyond restaurants that, like, and... so you can then tag things. So like we've got a vending machine at work, which is dangerous. So what Monzo does is you go,
it's a vending machine that takes card payments. That's the dangerous contactless card payments.
So it has in the app you can it categorizes. So it's, okay, you spent money at the vending machine. You've gone to Amazon. You click into that. It says you've shopped here this many times.
Yeah.
You spent this much in total, and your average purchase is this. Look at that app and see it. I've been to the vending machine 100 times. Like, that's a wake-up call.
In a week, no.
But it's also got that graph in the app. So you can scroll back through time and you can see, oh, that graph fell off a cliff on
Thursday. It also says you're likely to run out of money in a week based on your spending for the month. So you think, oh, shit, I've got to be careful. This has been groundbreaking. I love it so much, this Monzo app. And you can have pots in there. So, like, if I know, oh, for instance, I just started taking a fitness class that's, like, £6 a week. So I know, oh, before I forget, I'm going to shove that money into the pot so I don't accidentally spend it and then find myself without it.
I've got a pot for one of our niece's birthday presents. And it's just got this feature where, say, you spend, like, £1.80, it will round that up to £2 and put the 20 pence
into an account.
Round up to the nearest pound and save it. So there's all sorts of features in it, and like you said, it's been grand. But the big thing for me was I always knew how much money I had.
Instantly.
Because none of this, oh yeah, well the bank app says I've got £100, but oh, I don't know if anything's coming
out. It's like, oh, you have this, but this is what's available.
And they're kind of getting better, but like Monzo's there. Yeah. Other ones are as well, but that's what we use. And like,
do you have any golden tickets?
I don't know if you need them anymore, but I do have a couple of golden tickets.
That's so basically like, if you want it, it's at a demand.
But like anyone, like, yeah, looking, like, if you're kind of thinking, yeah, I'd like to do this, but I don't know what to do, like, separate your money. So we have a dedicated joint account with our emergency fund in it that we don't touch. Like, it's there if we need it, like, mm-hmm. big time. Then we've got a joint account where all the direct debits go for the bills. And we check in there to make sure that, like, nothing's
extras come out, yeah.
But we can do that, like, monthly, if that, you know. Because we also get text alerts. Like, because, oh, you're going to go overdrawn. We're like, why the fuck's that account overdrawn? It shouldn't be. Then we've got individual accounts that we get paid into. And then we've got individual accounts that we can spend from. It just means that we know what card to carry.
And I've got another individual account where my personal bills come from. It can sound a bit confusing, but it's just so
like, do it organized. Your own way, but it just means that you never worry, like, can I spend this? Is that going to do this? Like, we don't have to worry about that.
Because, when I had all, like, because I've always done the grocery shopping. So, like, when I had the money in the same account for the grocery shopping, for my gas and for my fun money, it was always a surprise. And I'd be having to think, okay, I've got this much in the account. I'm going to spend this much on gas. I'm going to spend this much on the shop. And I just never really knew what I had. But having everything separate, I know, okay, I have enough in that account to pay my car insurance, get enough gas, buy enough food, whatever. And then this account, I know, okay, I have £300 left for the month that I can spend or whatever.
Yeah, and be honest with yourselves, like, because this is where, like, we can think we're better than we are, and then, you know, human behavior is sort of universal enough that, you know, it's just not the case. It's like, if you've got one account for your bills, your petrol, and the thing about petrol, like gas, whatever, is like, that can fluctuate.
Yeah.
Like, the prices change almost daily. Like, if you fill up 20 miles later than you normally do, it's going to cost you. And there's any number of reasons why that could cost a little bit more. And then you're kind of planning to take your spending money out of that. And then it turns out your banking app isn't updating on the weekend. So you're out on a Saturday evening. It's very easy to accidentally spend a little bit too much money. And if you haven't got an overdraft that's authorised, well, now you owe late fees
mm-hmm.
or penalty fees.
And it's or just, your card gets declined.
Yeah, and there's just take the time, because it used to be the case opening a bank account was like hard work and a long time. Now stuff like Monzo, you download the app and you apply within minutes from your phone, and that's it. Like, you mentioned these additional pots you've got, that's not calling the bank and saying, can you open a separate account?
No, I swipe and say add.
There's a plus button,
yeah,
and it's just like that, it's open and you can put money into it immediately
and you can take it out straight away.
Like, anyone who's not using, like, modern banking, it is a revelation.
This is what gets me. Like, I have friends and I know people who still write checks for their mortgage, and it just blows my mind. They have their reasons, which makes sense, but I still think, like, I just can't imagine my mortgage not just coming out on its own. But, so yeah, we do things very separate, but we also do things very joint. And, like, sometimes people think it's weird that we have separate spending money. And people are like, why? You're married. It should all go into one pot. And a lot of it does. The stuff that is joint for us does. But the genuine reason why we have separate spending money is because we don't want each other to feel guilty when we want to buy something. If I want to go out and buy, you know, a bunch of clothes or a bunch of candles or a bunch of shit for the house,
or buy nothing 1 month to the next month, you've got double the money.
I don't want that to affect Rich in a way that he can't buy something that he wants or get something that he needs. Maybe he needs new shoes for work. Like,
well, yeah, because there's,
I don't want the fact that I felt like splurging on a facial to affect I needed shoes for work and now I have to put those on the credit card, put us into debt to get those.
There's no impact from your spending on my spending. Whereas, yeah, if you'd gone out and bought that Louis Vuitton from the joint account,
mm-hmm.
well, now we're down X amount of money.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I can't do what I want or need to do. So, like, yeah, like I said, it's not the only way of doing it, but it works for us, and we think.
Yeah, and
we've discussed other options, we've spoken to couples who do other options, and we thought, this feels like the best one for us.
It does.
But I think we should move on a little bit onto debt.
Yeah.
So, this is one people have different opinions of, and I think there's two types of debt, really. There's, as in, you can have a relatively modest amount of debt or a shit ton of debt.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that we should probably talk about student loans, because the way they work in the UK is very different to how they work in America.
Yeah.
So for anyone who isn't in the UK or familiar with the system, the way it works here is it's basically a tax. So you go to college, university, you get your loan. You then don't pay that back until you start earning a specific amount of money. Like, you reach a threshold. I don't know what it was. I think it's now like 17,000 pounds. Like, you know, it's a pretty decent wage,
but it's a scale,
and it's a scale. So it's not like you don't leave uni and think, oh, I owe this much money and I have to start paying it back like a bank loan. It doesn't work like that. If you never got a job, you never pay it back. If you never get a job that meets that threshold earnings, you never pay it back. And then,
but
when
someone who's earning, oh, sorry,
and then if you get a job and you're earning the money to do it, it automatically comes out your payslip. If you lose your job, you stop paying it. It doesn't count. The mortgage company sort of asks it, but it doesn't affect your credit rating. If you haven't paid it back after 25 years, it gets wiped. Like, it's a very different system. So you don't really worry about having it.
As you earn more, you pay a larger amount back over years.
So it's a sliding scale. So you have the threshold. You pay 9% of your earnings above that threshold back. And then if you... there's then tiers after that. And as you reach them, you pay more back. So... Yeah, it's a very different system. So student loan in the UK, if you're in a relationship, the partner's not going to say to you, not many people would say to you, okay, let's get all our financials on the table, like, what's your student loan?
Mm. Which is a very big conversation in America.
And in America, it's like, okay, I owe $50,000, $100,000 worth of debt, and one of your number one priorities is clearing that debt. So, but that's student. Then you've got, like, consumer debt, which we have here too. You know, in England, that's not any different.
Like credit card and stuff.
Credit card debt or store spending, like I've financed this and that.
Or car financing.
Car financing, you bought an expensive, like, guitar or whatever, and you get it on store credit. So you have to, or credit cards and stuff. So you have the conversation then of, okay, I've got this much money. Oh, I owe $2,000 on credit card. Okay, no big deal, let's work it out. Which is very different to owing like tens of thousands or whatever. So there's a couple of ways people can handle this, isn't there? There's, I won't tell you, or I'll tell you I've got no debt and I'll just figure it out on my own. Or you've got the people who say, I've got this debt and I'm handling it. And then you've got the couples who say, okay, well, that's our debt now. Like, I don't know if there is a best way for that.
Well, we have a combination, don't we? We have joint debt.
We have joint debt, like if we buy flights to America and then we say, okay, we owe that. Or we have the roof just been done, so we owe that. But equally, we've both said in the past, look, okay, while you're paying that debt off, it means you're not putting money into the joint account. I'll help you clear that. So then if we... There have been times when we've said, look... And even when there are occasions when we say, this is my debt, the other one... We also know if we ask for help, the other one will help.
Yeah.
So we do kind of view it as combined debt.
And separate debt.
Because we both kind of do carry credit card debt at times, but we know what's on there. It's on there deliberately. Like, there's a reason for it. And yeah, it's small amounts. Like,
and we talk about it.
I might have a couple of £100 on there, whatever. And we talk about it, but we both know, like, oh, this kind of could be trouble. We both said, I'm going to take a month out of saving this month and I'm going to put it on there. Like,
so and we support that because things happen.
Realistically, we view it as individual debt, but we do view paying it off as a combined thing. A lot of time.
And sometimes it's, oh, you know what? That's climbed up a bit over the last couple of months. I can totally take care of that. Or sometimes it needs to come from somewhere we're both going to work at. And
so I think a lot of people can be sort of protective of it, like, well, this is my money. I earned it. Like, that's your debt. And I think maybe there are types of debt like, okay, you've been fucking stupid and you're on your own with that. Or... you've come to this relationship with a significant amount of debt. Like, there are times I think, okay, you may want to keep that.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, like, you're a couple now. Like, your finances are joint, not just in terms of you owe them, but it's while they're paying that off, they're not able to contribute to the goals that you share.
Yeah.
So it's in both of your interests to say, okay, let's come together on this. What do we need to do to clear that down? Okay, I'll give you £100 for these 2 months and then...
Yeah,
you pay £200 a month and then it's done.
Or no guilt, don't put anything into our savings this month and pay it off. Or you know what? let's both tackle this. Like, we, because we have overpaid our mortgage in the past, with the way ours works is you pay, like, after a few months or whatever.
Basically, once you've paid, once you've overpaid enough to make one mortgage payment,
you can take a payment holiday. And Rich had to have a fair amount of dental work done 1 year. And it was enough that we, it would put us in a bit more debt. And it wasn't, it was an amount that we didn't want to really throw out all at once because it would diminish our savings. And so we had the option of, okay, we've built this up. Do we take the mortgage vacation? But yeah, get rid of that debt. And we did it and it was fine. And, you know, that could happen again, something like that. So, but it's just having that dialogue. And again, I know you get bored of us talking about communication, but with anything, debt, the whole money thing, you have got to talk about it. And it can be stressful and it can be boring. And there was a period of time when I remember how much I was like, it's all we talk about. It's so boring. It's no fun. But it was so necessary. And it's gotten to us in a point where things are automated. Like I said, we know what's what. I know down to within a few pounds what we spend on this and what we spend on that. And so does Rich. And we know exactly where we stand. And it's made it so much more worth it.
Yeah, I think, like, a lot of people think money's boring. And
it is, unless you're having fun spending it.
It can be, but
it's important.
Like you said, it is important. Like, just remember, like, you're, the reason for that conversation is removing stress in your life and creating your future. Like, that's kind of what motivates us. It's like, yeah, okay, this kind of sucks, but if we really want to pay that mortgage off, like, 2, 5, 10 years early, we need to figure that out.
Yeah,
like,
it's not just enough.
If we want to stop overspending on our food bill every month, we need to have a separate card for it and pay it off and see why we're overspending. Like, it's important, but I think the less you talk about money, the bigger a part of your life money is, because you're thinking, well, fuck, like, what's going on? I've got to log into my bank again. I need to talk to the bank. I've got to do this. I've got to pay that late. If you're like, I can't figure this out. You have the conversation once or twice. You figure things out. You open the accounts you need to. Like, whatever it is you do. But then it's done.
Yeah.
And then maybe once a month you just check in and make sure that everything's as it should be. Like, but just do it up front. And
it's like how Disney families have a calendar.
Disney families?
Busy.
Sound like Disney.
Maybe I did. It's how busy, and I can't say it at all. Busy families or busy couples, like, sometimes have a calendar because they both have so many hobbies, maybe busy jobs, lots of meetings and lots of, like, client entertainment or big, a lot of family commitments, you know, whatever. And they write it all out on the calendar so everyone knows what's happening and they're on the same page. There's no surprises that at the end of the month, oh, I didn't realize you were away for a night with this or whatever. It's really similar to money because you have it all laid out. We, for instance, like Rich said, we use a spreadsheet and it's all there and he's got the formulas in, so it adds and subtracts things and we update it when... That reminds me, we need to update the...
Yeah, our council taxes.
Yeah. Yeah. So we update it as things go and sometimes things cost less and we update that. But it just means that we can look at it and it's a picture and we know exactly what's going on. And it, you know, I think it works for you as a way. You know, I know partners can not be on board with what you want to achieve. I'm a worrier and I worry about money even when there's no reason to. And that works to our benefit because you've learned a lot working in the finance industry and you're like, hey, you know, I really want to do this. And even though I found it boring and didn't like talking about it,
it's benefited.
It's benefited us because I don't have to worry about it as much. I still do, and I always will.
Personality is different, I think it's a good way. So, like, I'm like, most of the time my attitude to money is like, okay, look, this is kind of what it's for. Like, we need to put this much money away a month. Well, these are the bills. Like, I'm on top of it. And then there are times I think, do you know what? Like, we work hard. Let's do that and we'll figure it out. It's like when we go to America, especially if I haven't been in a few years, I'm like, I'm buying jeans. Like, I'm buying that pair of boots. I'm buying that. Yeah, I'm putting my credit card. And I have a plan to figure out, okay, I'm comfortable carrying that debt for 3-4 months. I made this much money for those 2 months and then it's done. And I'm happy with that. What I don't do is say, I want that, I'm buying it, and then I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
You have to know where your comfort level is.
I can be a little bit like that, which is... But then it takes me a lot to make that decision to be like, oh, I'm going to buy it. Like, I don't just think constantly on my credit. I'm really good at paying my credit card every month. Every now and then it'll creep up because life happens and that's fine. But you also need to be realistic with your goals and don't feel like you have to have the answers now. I think I mentioned a few episodes ago, Rich was reading an article from like a money saving blogger and saw that he had a conversation. He recently had a divorce And he said, I think part of the reason that happened is because we didn't know what we wanted our marriage to look like in the future. And unfortunately, a lot of that does come down to money talk. So we did this. We ordered pizza. We had a little date night of it. This is what I foresee our future looking like. This is what I want from it.
Like, where do we want to go on vacation? How often do we want to go on vacation? Yeah. And I said to you, like, I put you on the spot and I said, how much cash do you want in the bank?
Yeah.
And like, as an emergency fund.
Yeah.
We've never discussed that before.
Yeah.
And you gave me a number and it's like, then you can say, okay, I agree with that number. So we want X amount in the bank. Okay, how do we get that?
And we don't really know that yet. We haven't answered that. We've got a few ideas.
But the point is, we wouldn't have even known the figure that we agreed on.
Yeah, we wouldn't even know that was a consideration. So that doesn't mean that you have to figure it out and know how you're going to do it, but it makes you more mindful. And so when money comes in, you know, sometimes you get unexpected things like bonuses or...
bills.
Or, I mean, like, Bennett, you get a bit extra. Like, okay. Maybe something... maybe you pay something off, like, whatever, so...
My last job, I was there for 3 years. I didn't get a single pay rise, I didn't get a single bonus. Like, where I am now, I'm quite lucky that it's all discretionary and the numbers aren't the same. It's not like every year it's a set percentage, but I'm fortunate that there's a cost of living increase. So where the bills go up, it kind of puts me at parity, at least. You know, sometimes it can be a little bit more. But I've had a job where I didn't get that. So every year when the bills went up, my earnings didn't. I was kind of losing money.
Yeah, and... I forgot where I was going because you interrupted me.
Okay, so what you reminded me of was when we had these sort of meetings, we said before, like, you might be on different pages. Another benefit of actually talking about it is you can then align yourselves. Like,
oh, yeah, I remember what I was going to say.
People may have this misconception that, well, we're on different pages and that's how it's going to be forever. It's like, no, but it will be if you don't talk about it. You can have a conversation, say, look, the reason this is important to me, or what do you think of this? Like, asking the question, what do you think? Like, what's your goal? That may be the first time they've...
What do you think? What is your goal?
But I mean, that may be the first time they've been confronted with that. I think,
yeah.
You know what, you're right. I would like to pay the mortgage off by the time I'm 55 instead of 70.
What I was going to say... And then you're on the same page. Before you interrupted me twice, maybe even thrice.
Mine was more important.
Was no, fuck you, it wasn't. Fucking made me forget again.
You just remembered.
Yeah, but I just forgot because you kept fucking talking.
Oh, wow, you should have been quicker. It'll come back.
I want to abuse you. Spousal abuse.
When we finish this, you can abuse.
Oh, I remember.
Okay, it's back.
So basically, like I was saying, you don't have to have all these answers right now, but it can make you mindful so that when you do get these kind of unexpected, maybe chunks of money come in, something happens, tax rebates, bonuses... you finish paying something off and now you've got a chunk available, you can think, oh, you know what? We wanted to achieve this. Maybe we can look at that money that wasn't available to us before. It now is. Can it go towards that savings, that emergency rainy day fund? Can it go towards those holidays? Should it go towards paying the mortgage off quicker? And, you know, if you haven't had those conversations and you don't really know what you want to achieve financially together, it can easily just disappear. And it's happened to us many times. And it's going to probably happen to us more. You know, we are not, like, sitting super-duper comfy. We're fine. But we have to think about money. And we have to talk about money. And if we didn't, you know, things could easily get missed. So we're not in a position that we want to be in quite yet. But we're really good at communication around it. And being transparent around it. And respecting the way each other spends it. Luckily, we're both... not like flamboyant spenders. We're not shitty with money. I mean, we have moments where I probably shouldn't have bought that, but it was whatever, £20, you know.
But you know, on that, because like we both sort of spend money on like multiple small things. But I said to you a little while ago, there's this guy I follow.
God, your boyfriend.
Yeah, there's this guy I follow, and his whole thing sort of like psychology and money and stuff like that. But it was a really good point that I'd never thought of, and he said, you know, people are taught how to save money. No one's taught how to spend money. And at first, you kind of think, well, yeah, I know how to spend money. Like, everyone spends money and they're in debt and all this. But the point he made was, like, we spend money by spending small amounts and then we overspend because we kind of think, oh, it's only $10, it's only $20. And you don't think that can get you into trouble. And you spend $10 10 times, and you spend $100 and you only had $50 and, oh, shit, I'm now overdrawn. And basically, so what he said was, you were not taught how to spend larger sums of money. Like... look, instead of spending $100 here and $100 there, like, buy that thing for $200, $200, $1,000, whatever, that you really want, that's going to make you really happy, instead of buying all these smaller things that are kind of meaningless.
Mm.
I think that's really, like, important.
I think it depends.
Only if you want that thing. Like, you say, you know, you might have wanted a Louis Vuitton. Oh, I can't afford that because it's this much money. But I'm going to spend that same amount of money over the next 6 weeks buying these kind of smaller things that don't mean as much
to me. Yeah, but like...
Because we feel guilty about it. Or we don't think, I'll save that this month and buy that.
Like, but at the same time, I don't know if I totally agree with that. So one thing that we get a lot of enjoyment out of is, you know, either going out for meals together or going out to movies together. That's not what it's
about.
Well, let me finish. So, yeah, we could go to a very, very fancy restaurant once a month and spend £100.
Yeah, but that's a specific example. Or we could go out two,
3 times. But well, that's specific to me. So what he's saying doesn't really work for me.
That's not the... It does. Because it's not like all our money just goes on to, like, a bunch of cheap restaurants. Like, it's, oh, I'll just buy this thing from Amazon. I'll just buy this thing over here. Like, I'm only spending this much money. Because in our head, you're only spending small amounts of money. And it's on things that... We've done this all the time. You go out to the shops and we buy things that we haven't gone out with the intention of buying. Like, it wasn't on our mind. It's like, oh, that looks great. I'm going to buy it. It's cheap. I can afford it. When there is this bigger ticket item that we do really want, but we tell ourselves, oh, that's that much money. We can't afford it.
Yeah, I get so it. It's not about,
No, I didn't say it pertains to everything. It's not like, oh, don't go out to that restaurant 3-4 times. Go to that one once. Like, yeah. Maybe we do want to go to that one 4 times because then that's 4 separate experiences.
Yeah.
But this is more about we can treat ourselves the thing we really want by teaching ourselves how to spend.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
Yeah.
I like it.
I like it in some cases.
Right, let's see what else. I think we might have touched on everything. I think just to sort of reiterate that the main original point of this episode was don't guilt trip your partner for spending.
Yeah, I mean, that was something that I want to touch on. Like how not to fight about money. Because a lot of couples fight about money.
Yeah, but I think the answer is having a system in place where, like what we've done, like we didn't come into this relationship on day one and say, this is how money works.
Mm-mm.
We went through the trials and tribulations and arguments. And
we're still trying to make stress. It better.
But you have a system in place where you say, okay, this is what our joint responsibilities are, and that includes savings and shared goals. That includes that. So to the person who said, I'm going to marry someone who has the same vision, like, we have the same broad vision, but we don't share one personality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's important to us at least to have some discretionary spending that we can do what we want with.
Mm-hmm.
To an extent, if I went and spent it all on strippers and hookers, like, you'd have something to say.
Just a bit.
But, you know, generally speaking, if I order something, with all due respect, it's none of your business what that is, and it's none of my business what you're spending your money on, because I know, well, okay, that's not at the detriment of us. That's not at the detriment of our goals and our savings plan and whatever. That's your money that you work 5 days a week, giving up. Well, we give up like 40 hours a week plus commuting time. You know, we give up probably 45 plus hours a week. We deserve to spend a chunk of that money
and or save it as we to want not to. Feel selfish or guilty about it. Like, I love that I can go buy, like you said, books it would not be of any interest to you, and, you know, smelly candles, or buy myself a nice face serum that I've been wanting without feeling bad about it.
And there's also no guilt of, well, why don't you buy me something? Because I'm sure there are a couple of times like, well, if you treat yourself to that, like, where's my thing? It's like, we both earn our own money.
Yeah.
And I treat myself. And don't get me wrong, we do treat each other to things.
Oh, yeah, we totally do.
But there's no pressure to do that.
Yeah, and it's like I said, we enjoy doing things together. So a lot of our spending money goes towards, you know, we went out to lunch today and went shopping. Rich paid for a top that he wanted out of his own money. And then I thought, oh, do you know what? I haven't really seen anything I want today. If there's something I want to buy, hey, do you want some lunch? I'll grab us some lunch. You know, so like, that's just what we chose to do. I didn't have to offer that, but I thought, hey, it'd be nice for us to have lunch together. I'll pay for that. It's fine. So things aren't actually that separate, but it means that I enjoyed that experience of us having lunch together. I benefited from it, so I paid for it. He wanted a top. That's nothing to do with me. I might like the way he looks in it, but it's nothing to do with me, so he paid for it, so it doesn't affect me. So it's not that we're selfish or that we don't want to pay for each other's stuff. Because actually, our lives are completely, like, absorbed in one another, and pretty much everything we do, you know, they have the touches. But we each have a little bit of money that the other one doesn't need to worry about.
Yeah.
Each month.
So I think that probably wraps it up.
Okay.
Just be open, be honest, communicate.
And be realistic. Don't set yourself goals that you're never going to achieve, and then you always feel shit about it.
But equally, have some ambition.
Absolutely.
But I don't feel like we fully finished the debt thing, but the reason for that, I think, is so personal. I think, again, be honest. Don't necessarily, if you go into a new relationship and say, okay, I've got 40 grand of debt, don't expect the person to say, okay, 20 of that's now mine.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I earn a lot of money, I'll pay for it. Like, you can't expect it, but you can communicate together and say, okay, this is how it will get paid off. But I think beyond that, really, like, it's hard for us to talk too much about debt because it's a personal
thing. It's different for everyone.
Why have you got the debt? Is it because you're reckless? Is it because you lost your job? Is it because actually it's a student loan and you're planning to increase your earnings and you kind of got it covered? Like,
it's because you started a business. And, you know, yeah, like, so it's a hard one. There's so many
aspects. But the bottom line to it is just be open mm-hmm. about it.
Like, you were saying that, and you think you did say it in this episode, you said a hell of a lot, that, like, some people don't even know what their partner earns.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that baffling. Like, how can you just not know? Like, yeah. I just don't understand that. Obviously, if you're early on, like, you don't know. But if you're, like, if you have joint finances because you're living together and you're paying stuff together,
and then you,
like,
don't want to be transparent because you think, oh, well, they want me to spend this. And they're like, are they the right person for you? Or have the conversation that says, look, this is my earnings and this is where I'm comfortable. Like, I'm not comfortable spending all of it on these luxurious extravagant holidays because, like, there's this idea people have that if you earn, let's say, six figures, let's say you earn six figures a year, so you're on a £100,000 salary, oh, that person's financially secure and they can do this, and it's like, so many of those people are still living paycheck to paycheck or living in debt because you get to a point in life where there's expectation on you to keep up with the Joneses, or you live in an area with other high earners, and it's like, oh, well, you know, they've got expensive cars, the kids are going to private school. Like, there's
all these high-powered jobs, so they have to have really expensive suits. Like,
right, so that you earn that
life
money.
Scales up now, as your money does.
Exactly. So just because you're earning six figures doesn't mean you're really comfortable. Your lifestyle may look fantastic, but it doesn't mean if you lost your job the next month you could still afford it. Like, it doesn't mean you've got any money in savings. So if you're thinking, oh, I'm technically a high earner, and if I tell my partner, they're going to want all this and that, but I can't afford it. So you need to have the conversation of, okay, I do earn this, but this is my comfort point. I can spend this much a month, or I'll cover 70% of the bills, or whatever. Like, you know, have that conversation, but yeah, it baffles me that the people just keep it completely secret.
Yeah, and another thing that we were really, like, you know, when we decided we were buying this house several years back, like, conversation that we had early on is, you know, okay, as we progress in our careers and as we earn more money and this and that, like, I don't want to keep, I said this, I think, originally, and you completely agreed straight away, I don't want to keep scaling our life up, like, oh, we earn more money, now we can buy a bigger house and then stretch us further, or I can get a more expensive car. Like, I want to have those increases be extra so that we can save more or have more fun with it or whatever.
Like you said before, we had a shared cost. We'd sat down and we said it's important to both of us that we'll clear our mortgage early. Like, how early is sort of flexible, but we know, like, the mortgage provider said, okay, you owe us X amount a month. We said, okay, we'll pay more.
Mm-hmm.
And we can
start. We don't still want to be paying our mortgage when we're 60.
But it just means that,
possible,
that we're able to then reverse engineer these decisions so that, like you said, when we get hopefully pay rises or new jobs or whatever, other people say, okay, I'm gonna go and buy that Tesla, my monthly income is increased enough to do this and that, and we say no because we've got that goal. We've got that vision. And I think without it, people just think, well, am I putting money away for nothing?
You're not.
We don't feel like you're gonna need it
at some point.
Like, we don't feel like we're saving per se, we feel like it's going towards something. So it's being spent for our future.
One day it'll be spent, yeah. And something else that really occurs to me a lot, I think about it, is how life is more expensive today. And I don't just mean that things cost more, because, you know, our salaries compared to our parents and grandparents is a lot more, but things didn't cost as much then. But they also didn't have as many things to pay for. So, yeah, they had electric, gas, mortgage, some insurances and stuff like that. Now you've got to have all these different cable. You've got to have Wi-Fi. You've got to have...
People can spend $200 on cable alone.
Yeah. You've got to have your mobile phones. You've got to have the best data network. You've got Netflix. Well, they're... I mean, that's been around for a long time, but we've got Netflix. Not for your
grandparents, it wasn't.
Potentially. I think they could be. You've got...
Credit cards didn't exist that long ago.
Yeah. And then there's things like iTunes, you know, Apple Music, Spotify,
but you know what's Netflix.
There's so much more to spend our money on, and if you don't, you're weird.
Yeah,
so
you're, you're weird. But what's also relatively recent?
Video games.
Yeah, but so store credit.
Yeah,
it didn't certainly. The first time I really saw that was about 10 years ago. I was in Canada, and I was like, "Wow, no wonder everyone's in debt." Like, you can go to any shop, and it's like, "Buy this over 4 years." Like, here, that was much more rare.
Oh, really? It's been around for a long, long time.
Yeah, right? I'm sure it has for certain things, but it felt like every shop went into in Canada, you could do it. Okay. That was what was rare. Yeah, you could always do it on certain things. But so all of a sudden, like, now people don't look at the cost of things, they look at what they can afford per month. And that's very dangerous.
Mm.
You know? And yeah, like you said, back in the day, or nowadays, if you don't do that, you're kind of weird. Like, oh, buy a new couch, it's only £10 a month.
There's so much to buy, and, like, and not even, like, material things, like Netflix. Like, you, don't get me wrong, we have Netflix, and we get a lot of use out of it, but you have nothing to show for it. And same thing with, like, Apple Music and stuff like that. Like, okay, these aren't huge expensive. These are a few dollars or $10 or less a month, but...
But you add it all up in conjunction. Let's say you are spending... Let's say you spent £100 a month on cable.
Mm-hmm. Easily done.
Then you spent £50 a month on your phone. And this is all, like, more in America, I'd say. I think you can spend $200 a month on cable, you can spend $100 a month on your phone. But, like, let's say you spent £100 on cable, £50 on your phone, £10 on Spotify, Apple Music, whatever, £8-9 on Netflix, like... All of a sudden...
That's almost 300. Like...
That's going to be 200. 100 for cable, 50 for your phone.
Okay.
You know, that's nearly £200 on its own. And like you said, what have you got to show for it? Well, then you might be thinking, then you've got your spending of people buy their electronics, like Apple Watches, you can finance mm-hmm. that. Your car's on finance before you've even covered the insurance for it, before you've covered the petrol for it, before you've covered servicing and MOTs for it. Your money just goes. So people... When you say, oh, what does your car cost? Oh, I pay £100 a month for it and then it costs me £50 in petrol. Okay, what about the hidden costs? Every journey has wear and tear.
Yeah, MOT is something that we don't have in America and I hate it. So in the UK, and I don't know if any other countries do it, they might, every year when your car is more than 3 years old, you have to take it to like a shop or whatever who's licensed and they evaluate the car. They look over it. And there's certain things that can make you fail. That's as simple as, oh, I forgot
to put... It's a roadworthiness test.
Yeah, so that's as simple as, oh, your tire tread's running low, you're going to need new ones, two things, because you've got a gas leak. So basically, they check every year to make sure that your car is safe to be on the road. So in America, if you know, oh, yeah, like, I do have that crap in my windshield and I should get it done. I don't know, I think for some stuff you can get tickets for it. Like, you can get a ticket for your taillight not working. You can do that here. But there's really, it's not as much like, you cannot, like, here, if your car fails the MOT, you cannot drive it.
You know, like, if it's bad enough, you have to replace the car.
Yeah. So, that's a stress. So, you got to pay, not only, you have to pay for it to be tested, which can vary depending on where you go, but there's a maximum. And then, obviously, if there's anything wrong for it, you've got to pay for it to get it fixed. And then, obviously, you can't drive it once it's failed until it's been fixed. So then you've got to figure out, how am I going to get around? I've got to arrange to work from home. Like, there's just so much to pay for. Life is so expensive.
So talk about your money and have plans and get on the same page.
Don't be a dick.
And don't guilt trip.
Yeah, and don't judge. If your girlfriend wants a Louis Vuitton and she can make it happen realistically, take her up to London and let her pick one out.
Unless you live in a different country, then take her to, like, wherever they sell them. But should we wrap it up?
Yes.
So someone left us a 5-star review on iTunes, which is very nice. So we'd like to ask again. So we've been asking, like, to leave a review anywhere. I think we're going to start saying, can we have a review on iTunes
for okay.
people who would be happy to leave us one? Because it helps us get in front of more people and look better. But it helps more people find us. So if you've got any value from this, we'd really appreciate it if you could leave us a review and come and talk to us. Mr. Mrs. Distance, Twitter and Instagram, and websites longdistancetomarriage.com. We have a contact us page. We read our emails. We had a really nice email recently, didn't we? Someone got in touch with a question. Someone got in touch to say how much the podcast would help them. So, like, we read everything.
Mm.
Come and talk to us. Tell us how you work out your money as a couple.
Yeah, what I would find really interesting is, like, couples who are married but long distance. Like, wow, how does that work? That's interesting.
Yeah.
Because I think, obviously, if you're long distance and you don't live together, things are going to be pretty separate. So, but there's all kinds of relationships, and we love hearing about them.
Yeah, let us know.
Cool. Bye, guys.